Hour number two, Chase Willey and D-Mace here on this Friday. During this hour, we're going to head over to the Titans complex, hear from some of the principals involved, scheduled to speak today, Derrick Henry, the coordinators. And so we'll give you a taste of that. Big Joe Dubin, Big Joe on the go, will join us at the end of the hour to preview tonight's game blitz from 6 to midnight here on 102.5 The Game. In the meantime, as we set the table for our Titans discussion today, D-Mace, there's something that I was thinking about a lot, and that is what I've been hearing all week. And I'm sure when we hear from the coordinators, if we hear from Shane Bowen at all, for Todd Downing, he's going to talk about this because Mike Vrabel already hit it. It's no secret. The Bills have an excellent defense without really blitzing a whole lot. So from an offensive standpoint, what are basic principles that you think about on how to be effective against a team that doesn't blitz? Especially because you think about it, as a receiver, you know there's going to be those extra guys back there in coverage. So what, as a wide receiver, do you need to be thinking about first and foremost?
Well, I mean, obviously, you know, when you come out, what's the defense? Are they in zone or are they in man? Because if they don't have to add that extra person in a box or two, they can disguise that coverage for a very long time. To whereas if you get a team that's always blitzing, you can pretty much pick up, you know, okay, they're in man, they're in zone after a while, because those guys typically start to play around that 5, 6, 7 yard area where I'm blitzing or I'm not. So typically you can find you're able to read the coverage quicker. But when they have the ability to get to the passer with four guys, possibly five, then now that ability to read the secondary, the coverage quicker, becomes a little bit harder, because now they can stay in one coverage for a little bit longer and don't have to bring that guy down in a box to try to either, you know, blitz or stop the run. But you know, the part that is good for the Titans is, even though Buffalo may not blitz, they still have to have that extra guy in the box for Derrick Henry.
Yes.
So it's still sort of like a blitz. Like, you still sort of have to, it may not be blitzing, but if I bring that extra man or two in a box, now I can see the defense a little bit quicker, because they want to try to get, you know, Derrick Henry before he starts going. You got to get Derrick Henry early. You can't let him get 2, 3 yards down the field and all of a sudden, oh, I'm going to try to hit him. It's not going to work that way. You're going to bounce off of him, or he's going to run through you, or it's going to take 2 or 3 guys to tackle him. So that's what, you know, I'm thinking. But then also, you have to find holes in zones. There are a bunch of holes in zones. You just have to find them. And you can't run through the hole. You have to see the hole, sit in the hole, and you and the quarterback really needs to be on the same page. Everybody needs to read the defense the same way. Because if a team doesn't have to blitz, they're just going to sit in a zone, man zone. They're going to disguise it for a very long time. So you and the quarterback need to be on the same page.
How much zone did you face in college in preparation for this? I'm thinking about Kyle Phillips and Treylon Burks. Mm-hmm. Rookie receivers, we saw Kyle Phillips. He can eat you up one-on-one, right? He's a great route runner. Of course, he missed practice yesterday. But I'm thinking just that art form that you're talking about, being on the same page with your quarterback, finding those holes in the zone. Mm-hmm. How hard of a skill is that to learn as a young player?
It's not hard if you put in the work. Again, you know, there's not – people are not inventing new defenses. I think, you know – after the Baltimore Ravens, that, you know, that great defense they had in 2000, and maybe the Seattle Seahawks defense when they won the Super Bowl. After that, there hasn't been like these new variants of defenses that are out. You know, when Chicago did, you know, that, what did they call
it? The 40-60? Yeah,
the 40-60 defense.
Back in the day?
Could nobody figure it out.
No,
nobody could figure
years.
It out. Exactly. And then people started to figure it out. Okay. Miami figured it out, you know, on the game where if Chicago wins, they go 16-0 and breaks Miami
record. That
was
the only team that figured it out.
Exactly. That was the only team that figured it out. So you had that defense. And then You know, past that, you had the Titans' great defenses, and then the Baltimore Ravens' great defenses, and teams started to figure it out. Then you had the Seattle great defense. So eventually, there's only so much you can do as a defensive unit. To whereas, you know, eventually the offenses will figure it out, and you know, you'll go about your business. But the way this defense, I believe, the way this defense plays, it's not hard to, and Vrabel talked about this, it's not like they're doing a bunch of exotic things. They're not. They're playing base defense, easy defense to read, but everybody's doing their job. I talked about the Titans. Titans are the same way. You know, they don't play this complex defense, but they've been so good, especially last year. Why? Because guys were disciplined mm-hmm. in what they did. Guys didn't get outside of the area they were supposed to be in. Guys were not trying to be heroes. Guys knew what the defense was, played their role, and they were a very good defense. Last week, it didn't happen that way. The second half, first half, they did exactly what they were supposed to do. Second half, you had guys trying to be heroes, guys going outside the framework of the defense. When you have good players and a good defense, the only way you get beat consistently or the only way you look bad is if you start to do things outside of what the defense is asking you to do.
It's a great point, and you can play pretty well uh-huh. against the Bills.
Yeah.
And you can be pretty disciplined, and you're still going to give up some stuff because they're so good. So one more receivers question for you. Did you like playing against man or zone better as a receiver? What was your favorite coverage to play against?
I mean, to me, it really didn't matter. Now, in man defense, the holes are going to be a little bit tighter, and you're gonna be asked to make some difficult catches at times. In zone, I think the only thing you worried about a lot of times is getting hit because, yes, there's going to be a hole, but either a yard, 2 yards behind you, 2 yards to either side, or in front of you, there's somebody close, you know, by.
Yeah, yeah.
So when you get the ball, that's why they always say turn up in your shadow. When you get the ball, turn up. Don't go side to side because that's where those guys are coming from. Side to side, and they're tight windows. Not as tight as man, but they're still tight windows. So, but to me, it didn't matter which coverage I was playing in, playing against. You know, it was, hey, I need to go out and do my job. It might adjust my route depending on zone or man, but I still ultimately got to catch the ball.
Do you think receivers today have it a lot easier? I think the answer is pretty obvious.
Oh, of course,
but I could hear the wheels turning when you look back on it. In the zone, you had to worry when you catch the ball over the middle, somebody's near you and somebody could light you up. You just can't light the guy up anymore.
No, I mean, listen, the guy didn't have to be near you, you know, to take your head off. They can come in with their helmets down. They were coming in for knockout shots. And I am truly happy that the NFL has changed that because I'm sure there are plenty guys that could have played a little bit longer had those rules been implemented 10, 15 years ago, 20 years ago. I'm sure there are guys that could have played a lot longer. But that was a different game. You know, they were not as proactive, the NFL, with, you know, protecting the player. It was only when they were taken to court that they decided, okay, we need to do something now. Had they not been taken to court, we would be playing the same type of football now as they played, you know, 15, 20 years ago, where coming across the middle was sort of this manhood gut check for you. Like, either you're going to catch the ball and take this big hit, or you're going to make a business decision and walk away from that catch because you don't want to get hit. You know, they don't have to worry about that
now.
Yeah,
it's a much easier business decision.
Exactly.
Now because
absolutely.
They have to, it's much harder to square up a guy in the middle of the field. Yet, you still see these defenses being very effective today, even at least making you work to get the ball up the field. That will be a big challenge for the Titans against the Bills defense. When we come back, We'll continue to break down the Titans and the Bills. We've got other things to throw at D-Mace. Also, we'll get you some of the press conferences. Right now, they're talking special teams. We'll let you know what they're talking about over there right now. Craig Aukerman, who is the special teams coordinator, he's talking about the kick that was missed. We'll tell you what he said when we come back. We'll also look forward to some of the other guys speaking today. We'll play some of it live for you. Stay tuned. We're coming back with more of Chase Willie and D-Mace here on 102.5 The Game. Very interesting choice. A little Yacht Rock by Nick Keyser. Work on the board today on Chase Willie and D-Mace. Willie Donick, Derek Mason here with you. Now, just minutes ago over at the Titans Complex, their special teams coordinator was talking, Craig Aukerman, and he was breaking down, and I'll give him this. He was very detailed and very forthcoming on all of the things that went into the 47-yard miss that has everybody in a very different mood because it's the difference in winning and losing. It's the last play of the game. But there was something that he said, mm-hmm. Derek, that really caught our attention. And he said that the decision to move the ball, because we've talked about it a lot already on the show, and at some point we got to move on, right? He says, look, we're confident the next time we're in this spot that Randy Bullock will make the kick. But he said in regards to the 47-yard kick that it was really not Randy Bullock saying, put me on the right hash. It was their data, their analytics that said the best chance for him making it is under the conditions on the right hash. So this is a great discussion of the value of analytics and when is it right. And it's ironic we say this mm-hmm. because the Titans have the reputation of not going by analytics. They're way on the light side of analytics compared to a lot of other teams. For example, the Ravens, mm-hmm. your other former team, very heavy into data and analytics. But the Titans kind of went with the data here, and he lost. So if I'm Randy Bullock, and I don't really care where the ball is, wouldn't you rather just have it be anywhere and not be 3 yards further back? I think that's a pretty interesting thing. They sacrificed 3 yards to put the ball on the right hash, and I was under the assumption that it was Bullock saying, put me on the right hash. That's where I want to hit it.
Yeah, it brings up more questions than answers. Yes, you're forthright and say, hey, listen, we based on analytics, you know, the ball should be on the right hash. But Randy Bullock doesn't care which hash it's on. Well, if that is indeed the case, then wouldn't it, you know, just be the smart thing to do is to leave it right where it is?
Yes.
Or either if you want to put it to the right hash or the middle of the right hash, don't go back 3 yards. Just slide over and down the ball. Get on one knee instead of running backwards 3 yards and over clearly to the right. If Randy Bullock says, if you come up at a press conference and says, my kicker doesn't care where he kicks it from. Okay, if that's the case, damn the analytics. My kicker says it doesn't matter with him, so leave it closer and right where it is. I don't get that part. And I understand some coaches, sometimes you can get too much in the analytic weeds trying to make the right decision instead of just saying, okay, this is what I feel. My kicker doesn't matter my kicker. We're going to kick the ball right from here. Just block it up.
Well, as we've said, too, remember what happened before. They complete the pass to Phillips, mm-hmm. who apparently injured his shoulder on the play because he missed practice. Hopefully it's not that bad. We'll find out more in the coming days. But from the time he makes that catch to the time they break the huddle, they mm-hmm. wasted so much time they had to burn their last time out. So they missed a chance to advance the ball more with the timeout in their pocket. So they're going to run any play.
But Willie.
And then still call timeout after that play if there was a guy tackled in bounds.
But that doesn't, to me, that timeout isn't a big problem. Like, that isn't the end of the world. Do the Titans wish they had to use that? Probably not. They wish they still had it in their pocket.
Yes.
But it wasn't like it was, you know, 6 seconds left and they had to burn this timeout and they needed a touchdown. No, It was 20-something seconds left. They got it down to 18, had to burn the timeout. There's still 18 seconds
they're
left.
They're still okay.
Your
they're
first okay. down, you know, you still can call a play that's going to put you out of bounds. And if it's not there, throw the ball away.
There's so many things they could have done. But I do agree with you 100%. I think this is one that we can say, and I am a huge proponent of analytics.
Mm-hmm.
But this is an example of, I think, overthinking. Mm-hmm. And over data-ing rather than just keeping it simple and saying with 18 seconds, rather than sacrifice 3 yards, go backwards,
mm-hmm.
then spike it just to put the ball on the right hash. I mean, I think running any number of plays or just running the kicker out right there with 18 seconds and kicking it in the middle. 44 is easier than 47.
Of course.
Would think the analytics would back that up. 44 straight away. As opposed to 47 on the hash, this is all hindsight. But they missed a chance to make a kick from 42 or 40. Or just, you know, mm-hmm. they could have run a play, still had plenty of time with 18 seconds, right? You could you could run it, slide inbounds with no timeouts, still run up and spike it and have plenty of time.
Exactly. Every coordinator on their play sheet, offensive coordinator, defensive coordinator, special teams coordinator, and the head coach, if he wants to hold a sheet too, should have the letters K-I-S-S in big, bold letters written at the top of their play pad or their, you know, play sheet, which means keep it simple, silly. Sometimes you just got to keep it simple. Sometimes you got to say, darn analytics. We're at 41 yards. We don't need to go back to 43, 47, 44. We don't need that. Let's stay at 41 yards. And our kicker, who's a professional kicker, is getting paid a lot of money. We expect you to make that kick. We don't say, oh, the quarterback needs the ball on the right hash, so let's run the ball over here, or let's sneak the ball over here so his next pass can be from the right hash. No, you expect your quarterback to be able to make every throw from any hash. So why not the kicker?
So
you pay him enough money. It's not like it was a 55 or 60-yard kick.
Right. So the basic thing is that we learned is that they sacrificed the net result. They sacrificed 3 yards. With Tannehill moving the ball to the right hash. They moved back 3 yards so that they could put the ball on the right hash, not because it was Bullock telling them that that's where I want it. It's what the data told them gave them the best chance to make the kick under the conditions. Very interesting stuff. When we come back, we're going to hear from Todd Downing, the offensive coordinator for the Tennessee Titans. He's a guy under the microscope this week, no question about it. Stay tuned. You're listening to Chase Willie and D-Mace, 102.5 The Game, 106.3, and The Game Nashville app. All right, let's head over to the Titans facility and listen to offensive coordinator Todd Downing.
We started faster. That was a point of emphasis. And we were able to get a touchdown on the opening drive by getting the ball to a couple of different guys, including Traylon and some other people. So there's certainly an element of that to try to get guys going. You want to balance that without trying to force anything, you know, and that's always, you know, part of the ebb and flow of the game. But, yeah, I think there's some validity to trying to get guys going early.
Generally speaking, when you guys have an offensive philosophy that everyone knows and that won't change.
Listen to Todd Downing. Lost the feed there for a second. Hopefully we can get that back for you in a second. Boy, really riveting. We got about two sentences and then we lost the feed. This is life.
Yeah, that's the way it is. You got to improvise.
He did say, among other things, while we try to get that back up for you, he said that the third and one run to Chigakonkwo was, quote, a bad call. I take full responsibility for that call. So, D-Base, you were defending. Hold that thought because we'll come back to it. But here's more from Todd Downing.
Let's see. So,
the O-line, as far as a protection standpoint in week one, and maybe what's the challenge here in week two against a team that had 7 sacks?
Well, thank you for asking, Jim. I thought we protected well. I thought we did a nice job of setting a firm pocket for Ryan inside. He was able to step up in the pocket, and get through a couple of progressions. You know, we ended up with the one statistical sack that was on a keeper that Ryan scrambled, but you know, that was the only blemish on otherwise pretty good protection day.
Yeah, how encouraged were you by Ryan Tannehill in that season opener?
Yeah, I thought he saw the game well. You know, we were talking on the sideline, and he was diagnosing defense as well, and particularly for a defensive scheme like that and the unknowns of the opener, you know, he was seeing things and indicators well, and so that process was good. Again, we just need to convert more on third down so we can keep those drives alive and give more opportunities for those first down play passes or, you know, the counter punches that we talked about, and that's, you know, that's obviously the goal this week.
How much bigger the challenge from a protective standpoint against Buffalo based on what you saw from them last week?
Yeah, that's the fun of the NFL, right? Every week's a different challenge. Last week it was a little bit more scheme and figuring out how you're going to block things up, and this week it's about matchups and knowing our opponent. So we've got to dive into understanding who we're blocking, right, and having, you know, a protection plan for some of those edge rushers, and then, you know, make sure we're doing everything we can to help those guys in one-on-one situations.
You talked about getting guys going and all. Woods and Westbrook each caught a ball early and then kind of disappeared from the pass game, and then Hooper was targeted really late in the game. What do you have to do to kind of spread things around, or are you just trying to play the hot hand and whoever's open there?
Yeah, you know, I think that there's a little bit of misnomer to the number of targets. Just because they weren't targeted early doesn't mean they weren't first in the progression early. And so there are a couple plays where we might have had those guys highlighted at different points in the game. And then a couple of those penalties, you know, on Hoop, he was the primary target in the two-minute drive, you know, with those holding calls where if he wasn't held, he probably gets a target. So, you know, there's a little bit of that to it as well. But I do think there's a balance between trying to get everybody going and spreading it out and, you know, sticking with what's working, so to speak. You know, and obviously we got Dontrell going a little bit in the red zone and situationally, which may have taken away a couple of targets from those other guys.
Getting the defensive holdings and that sort of – is there a knack or a trick for guys to be able to get more of those calls, whether it's a defensive hold or a pass interference call? Do some guys have that ability to do that more than others?
I think so, yeah. It's just contact, you know, strength through contact and play speed. You know, Hoop does a great job of setting up defenders and getting on an edge, and sometimes when they hook him or grab him, you know, he's able to show that he's being restricted, and that kind of movement, you know, lets the official know that there's been some grabbing there. So I do think there's some savviness to that and some football IQ of understanding, hey, I got a guy on a certain leverage. Let's take advantage of it and put him in a tough spot.
On the predictability front, last year, second down, if you got sacked or threw incomplete on first down, you ran 64% of the time.
Mm-hmm.
Is that a we're going to run no matter what and we're going to make you stop us thing? Or is that a stubbornness where you're not using everything that's available to you?
Yeah, maybe a little bit of both. You know, certainly trying to get ourselves, you know, into a little bit better third down situation on those second and longs. And I have a lot of confidence in our run game to be able to be efficient in those situations. You know, I wouldn't necessarily categorize 64-36 as like, you know, stubbornness and just flat out tilting the scales. It's leaning one way, but you're a couple runs, couple passes here and there from balancing that out. So, you know, hopefully I'm not too predictable this season.
A couple runs from balancing, a couple passes from balancing it out, but you choose not to take those couple passes.
Yeah, and again, that can be.
That's Todd Downing, offensive coordinator for the Titans. Lost the feed again there, but there's plenty for us to chew on, Derek, as we hear him talk about that. So you had a couple of interesting statements that I saw your rabbit ears went up, and mine did as well. First of all, if you missed it a minute ago, and we didn't get a chance to play that live for you, but he did say that he felt like it was on him. He took full responsibility for the ill-fated third and one of several third and shorts that they missed, particularly in the second half, the Chigakonkwo tight end around that seemed like it was doomed from the start. He said, that's on me, bad call, I'll take full responsibility. You still have your doubt. You still disagree.
Yeah, I still disagree. My thing is, you got to show me how that was a bad call and then show me the play and the way it's supposed to be designed and blocked. Okay, because what I'm seeing as a former player, And as a guy that has been in that position where I didn't get my block, and because I didn't get my block, the play didn't get the yardage it should have gotten. You know, that wasn't on the offensive coordinator. It was on a player. So not only do you, okay, you say it was a bad call, but show me why it was a bad call. Tell us why it was a bad call on 3rd-and-1. Because what I'm looking at, and what if you are looking at this from a, you know, if you're not being biased and you're just looking at it objectively, you see a play ran and you see two guys that don't do their job. Taylor Lewan and the receiver out wide. They're not blocking anyone. So if they're not blocking anyone, why is that a bad play? If we can say that on several plays where guys were getting beat and the play didn't work the way it was supposed to work. Is that Downing's fault? Well, now I don't know if it's his fault or not, because I know he doesn't want to call out the player. And he's sort of, you know, falling on a sword. But, man, you can't keep doing this. Grow a backbone. You can't keep doing this, you know, because after a while, it's going to cost you your job when you're falling on a sword every time when guys are not doing the job they're supposed to do.
Okay, so let's take that a little bit further. That was something that, as you were listening to his answers to the various questions, and I commend – again, him
I understand why he did it. Understand that.
He's trying to be open and honest, but you're saying his mentality tells you something about him as a coordinator. Your read does not have you brimming with confidence.
You got to be confident in the call that you make. When you listen to Vrabel, if they would ask Vrabel that same question, I believe they did ask him. He didn't say that was a bad play, and he had watched the film. He just said, hey, listen, everybody needs to do their job on every play, offensively or defensively. And I told you guys early in the week, if one guy on defense doesn't do their assignment, a lot of times it can equal into a sack, a turnover, something good. But if one guy doesn't do their job on offense, it can turn into a quarterback sack, a quarterback sack fumble. It could turn into loss of yards. And that is what happened, I believe, on that particular play. I have not heard Vrabel say something like that. He's discussed and he probably skirted around it, but he hasn't blatantly came out and said, well, maybe that's the play we shouldn't have run out. No.
It is interesting. You know, I did not see any or hear while we had the feed any questions regarding just specific 3rd-and-shorts, but you can tell he's lost some sleep over that factor. Well, one of the things he talked about too was sticking with what's working as opposed to trying to get other people involved that have not been involved in the game plan. I just try to look at that and say that's tough for any coordinator. That's got to be a challenge every week for every coordinator. Getting my top players the ball and scheme-wise, here's what I see the defense giving us. And we're going. He used the example of it was working to Dontrell Hilliard. So maybe that fact took away from a couple of targets that might otherwise have gone to Hooper or Woods, all the people that everybody's up in arms about. Why did these guys not get the ball thrown to them? Well, some of it does have to – you have to give the guys some slack on what is the defense giving you, right?
Yeah. I mean, there could be several plays in a game plan – or on a specific drive that is targeted for, say, Austin Hooper, or targeted for, Treylon Burks or Robert Woods. But then the defense sort of dictates who you're going to throw it to. They may take away that first read or that second read, and it has you going to that third or fourth read or even, you know, taking off and run. So I do understand, that's the truth when he said, listen, The play probably started out us wanting to go to Austin Hooper or Treylon Burks, but because of the defense, we were not allowed to go to those guys. We had to go to our second and third guy in the progression. So I understand that part. But I'm not trying to, he says, trying to get everybody going. When you say everybody, do you mean like everybody other than your top two or three playmakers? Because I understand, yes, there are other guys on a team, But if we want to win, there are three guys that I'm trying to get involved in a game. Heavy and quickly and heavy. Every game. Obviously, Derrick Henry is the one guy that you need to get going right away. You need to get him involved right away. And they do that. But besides that, Austin Hooper, Treylon Burks, and Robert Woods need to be three guys that it's a importance to get those guys involved in the game somehow, some way, early and often. Because if you don't, those guys tend to get lost. The further the game goes along, those guys tend to get lost in the offense. So you need to find a way, Downing, as a coordinator, find a way to get your playmakers the ball, because if you don't, you're going to continue to lose. Hmm. You're going to continue to make it tough for the defense.
And remember, the context here is the passing game as a whole graded out way better than the running game. You could argue that looking at the grades, the efficiency, where they lost the game was the poor running game. I mean, they just really didn't run the ball very well. So
but that
we'll
was
see.
Against a so-so Giants defense. Mm-hmm. It, Giants defense isn't bad, but it isn't really good either. That's a I wouldn't be surprised if they finish below the middle of the pack in defense.
Absolutely.
Now you're going against a Buffalo Bills team whose defense is top-notch. They're a top three defense in the National Football League. You better find a way to get your playmakers involved.
So there you have it. That's some stuff from Todd Downing today. During the 12 o'clock hour, we'll switch to the other side of the ball. We'll hear from Shane Bowen, what he has to say about the challenge ahead for the Bills and some of his thoughts looking back on week one. When we come back, we'll set the tone for tonight on the gridiron on the high school side. Joe Dublin will join us, and we'll talk game blitz. Stay tuned. You're listening to Chase Willie and D. Mace here on 102.5 The Game. Tune in to the College Football Game of the Week on 102.5 and 106.3, The Game. Tomorrow, it'll be Georgia and South Carolina at 11 a.m. That's our College Football Game of the Week, brought to you by Twin Peaks, home of the 29-degree drafts and wall-to-wall sports, along with Superbook Sports, voted number one sportsbook in Vegas. Download their app today. That's Superbook Sports, College Football Game of the Week. Georgia and South Carolina, the colleges going wild tomorrow. High schools ready to get it going tonight. And that's why you hear the Magnum PI. It is Big Joe. Joe Dublin is on the line with us. He is poised, along with Elijah Campbell, for another edition of the Game Blitz tonight. Looking forward to that action. Joe, how's it going?
It's going good, man. Another Friday. It's hard to believe. We are in week five, so the high school football season is halfway done tonight. I know they get an open week. They get the 11 weeks to play 10. I get all that. But tonight is the fifth week. So a lot of teams are at the halfway point of the season. It's so crazy that we're already there. And we're already seeing the separation. Good teams and bad teams are happening. But I got to tell you guys, there's one game tonight on the schedule that if you're looking for a high school game to go see. White County travels to Mount Juliet. White County's got a running back named Malachi Dowdle. He has rushed for, in four games, nearly 1,300 yards, 19 touchdowns.
Wow.
He's putting up, if you remember, Jalen Hurd numbers.
Yep.
I mean, this young man is fantastic. It's a huge region game tonight, so whoever wins this game gets the upper leg. Mount Juliet came out of the gate. They lost to Gallatin to start the season. This is at Mount Juliet tonight. It's going to be a packed house. White County brings a lot of people. This is why we love Friday night football, because of games like this. White County has not been that good throughout the years, but they're rolling tonight 4-0 with a running back who's one of the best in the state, and it should be an epic game. I'm so looking forward to that game tonight.
So if you're out towards Wilson County, that is one to circle for sure. All right, Joe, I'm going to ask you a loaded question here. As you mentioned, we're getting close to the halfway point here. Some people are at that point. Who is the best high school football team in our listening area?
Well, that's a good question, and there are several. Oakland, obviously, the defending champions. And see, the thing is, guys, I don't do year-to-year. I mean, they were good last year. They won the state championship, but that's last year. So look at this year. You know, they don't rebuild, they reload. They're a fantastic football team. Then you got Lipscomb Academy, who's, you know, Trent Dilfer and the boys are going out of state, knocking off teams and playing great. They play FRA tonight. That should be a good test for Lipscomb and Dilfer and those guys. Those are two of the best teams that are standing out right now that could compete with. I think Oakland could compete with any team in the country. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're fast, they're quick, they're big, they're powerful, and they have a great team. They got a big game tonight versus Siegel down in Rutherford County. Siegel's having a great year, though, off to a great start. But those two teams right now are kind of the cream of the crop of what's happening. And there's a bunch of the teams that are really good. But remember, kind of like in the NFL, you just got to win your region. If you're one of the top four teams in your region, you get in the playoffs. You know, the Titans right now are in the worst division in football, AFC South. You just got to win that division. You don't have to go 15-2. You win the division, you get in the playoffs. That's the same thing with high school football in the region. You just got to be one of the best four teams in your region to get in the playoffs. Anything can happen. But right now, Oakland, Lipscomb Academy, there's nobody close to those two teams.
Now you got Ensworth traveling to Memphis University. Both of those teams are 3-1.
Yeah, that's a good battle for Ensworth to go on the road. That's the thing with these schools in the Division II level is they've got to travel across the state to play these games. So, you know, it's they got to travel 3.5 hours, taking an MUS team that's really good. You know, Brentwood Academy's got to play some team called St. Benedict of Auburndale. I'm not sure what that school is, but you've got to go on the road, you got to produce, you've got to win. So there's a long road trips for these guys in high school football. So that's a good game tonight for Ensworth. That's a game, and I love Rock Batten at Ensworth. What a great coach, what a great man. They go down there and knock off at MUS. That's a good win for the program to set up for later in the season when they take on the Brentwood Academies, other teams in that tough division. So I'm just not a fan, guys, of these schools having to travel so far to play games. But that's what it is right now. We had a game last week. Fayetteville had to travel up to Upperman. That's like 3 days by yak. I mean, that takes so long to get up there. It's just, I hate it for these kids.
There's just not that many yaks available, too. It's hard to find yaks this time of the year. Now, you do want yards after the catch, yak. You know, that's a good kind of yak.
Exactly.
But actual yaks,
but
anyway, it's kind of hard to find.
Ensworth goes down there, can knock off MUS. That puts him 2-0 in the region. And, again, remember, he's got to be in the top teams in the region to get in. That's a big win for them. But MUS is only giving up 29 points in four games. So that's going to be a battle tonight for Ensworth down there.
How about the Brentwood and Ravenwood? This has always been a good matchup.
Yes, that is. You know what? That is another game of why we like high school football, because this is far more than just two teams playing each other that are just close apart. You know, we got games, teams that play each other that are just a couple miles apart all the time. But this game, ever since Ravenwood came on the scene, I think back in 2004 or 2003, whatever it was, their goal was to go at Brentwood, and they've been back and forth. Ravenwood's won a couple state titles. Brentwood's won one since then, so this is always good. So it's the bragging rights. I mean, these kids all grew up together. I mean, they hang out together. They play youth sports together. They still run around the same circles. So that's a good game tonight. Two good coaches. Ravenwood's got a great quarterback in Chris Parsons, who's headed to Mississippi State to play. So it'll be a lot of fun tonight with those two. And Brentwood's got a kicker. His name's Isaac Hayes. He kicked
Isaac Hayes.
Yeah, right? So he has to love this guy. He kicked a 50-yarder against Blackman in week one that I promise you would have been good from 60. I mean, the guy nailed this kick. So you'll remember the kicker from Brentwood, Isaac Hayes, has got a great leg tonight. So it'll be a good game for both. Again, a region game. Both teams are unbeaten in the region. The winner gets a leg up in Region 7 in Class 6A.
But now, of course, the Shaft theme is going through my mind as soon as he says Isaac Hayes. Another one that is always a great traditional rivalry, Joe, is NBA Father Ryan. That's another one where you're just going to love the atmosphere if you go over there.
Well, not only that, you know, NBA, we talk about Marcel Reed and how great he is, head to Ole Miss to play, and Marty Ruberard, the head coach at NBA, fantastic coach. But Ryan, you know, they played East Nashville in week one. They got beat in the first half really bad, but they rallied back and got beat 32-20. But here's what happened. Ryan goes on the road last week, and they beat Cane Ridge pretty solidly. Cane Ridge is an outstanding football team. So Ryan now has got all this confidence and feeling good about this. And this is another football game that inside the region, you know, if NBA can get this game tonight, they've got a nice leg up on them. But at the same time, Ryan knows good and well they can make this season if they could go ahead and knock them off. Ryan's 0-1 in the region. NBA's 1-0. Ryan lost to Pope John Paul a few weeks ago, you know, that rain on Friday night with delayed games for hours. again, that's another unfair to these kids. You postpone a game for 3 hours. You come back out and play at 11 o'clock at night and try to get the game in. But, again, this is a game for Ryan. If they can knock off NBA, they're back in the running in Division II in the East Middle region right there. So that's a huge game. Be a fun game, exciting game tonight. Another game you'll check out if you're going around Middle Tennessee.
Okay, so remember, 6 to midnight tonight on the Game Blitz. And just for those who have listened, they already know this. But if you haven't, you're going to get scores on all of the games. You're going to get the some of the big games of teams that maybe have a chance to win a state championship, but also coverage of all of them. The rural games out in the country in our listening area, the metro games, you guys do it all. So tell me a little bit more. Game Blitz tonight, of course, starting at 6 o'clock, Joe.
Yeah, it's a good point, Will. I mean, it's not just like what's happening in Nashville. I mean, like our first game tonight is Richland at Cascade. I can't tell you where Cascade is. I just know it's in Middle Tennessee.
That's what I have not been to Cascade. I have heard of Cascade, but that's one I have not been to. I've been to a lot of schools, but not that one.
Yeah, and they deserve the love, too. I mean, all these, you know, Elijah and I have adopted Glen Cliff on the show.
Oh, yes, the Colts, baby.
They haven't won a game since 2018. I mean, they're getting, but they're fighting. I mean, they were a few games, Cheatham County. They were 6-0 in the fourth quarter. They lost 19-0 last year. We were rooting these teams on. I mean, these kids deserve our love and deserve to be honored, deserve to be lifted up on Friday night. As I told everybody, you got all week for the NFL, you got all week for college, but just carve out 4 or 5 hours on a Friday night for these high school football kids. And a game like Glen Cliff, you know, when they shut the program down 3 years ago and they rallied back and they got enough kids to come out now, that's why we love this game. And so we lift this Glen Cliff football team up, hope they have a good game tonight, and win the game and get off that long losing streak they got. That's, you know, that's the beauty of this show. It's not our show, guys. It's the high school football coaches' show and these players around Middle Tennessee, just to carve out a little love for them on a Friday night. And we hit all the schools in Middle Tennessee, all of them. We show all of them the love. So thanks for bringing that up, Willie.
All right, Joe. Go get them tonight. Rest up. You and Elijah are going to knock them dead. And thanks for joining us. We'll talk to you again next Friday.
All right. Thanks, boys. Appreciate you.
Yep.
All right. So join Big Joe and Elijah Campbell tonight for the Apple Collision Center's Game Blitz, presented by National Playmakers Academy from 6 to midnight. They'll preview the big games, take you through the entire night of high school football around the mid-state. Apple Collision Center's Game Blitz, presented by National Playmakers Academy on 102.5 and 106.3, the game. We'll seesaw back to the Titans when we come back. We'll hear from Shane Bowen, the defensive coordinator. We'll also give you some more tidbits from what's happening over at the Titans complex today. Stay tuned. Hour number 3 is coming up.